You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 159 of Retired Racehorse Radio on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, Cashel Company, and Horse Radio Network. Retired Racehorse Radio is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse, brought to you in cooperation with the Retired Racehorse Project and New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program.
Today, we're back with Making the Makeover rider, Sam Fawcett, to learn about her tips and tricks to keeping a positive mindset as a rider and competitor at the Thoroughbred Makeover. We touch base with New Vocations' Bridget Heasley on lameness versus weakness in training horses and introducing our adoptable horse of the week. Stay tuned.
And they're off on Retired Racehorse Radio, the podcast that is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse.
This is Joy Orr in Detroit, Michigan.
This is Kristen Kovach-Bentley in Jamestown, New York, and you are listening to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Kristen, kids are going back to school.
You know, I haven't seen the bus go by yet, actually, now that I'm thinking about it.
Oh, you haven't had that one yet?
I think we go back to school late here in the north.
Oh, you probably are the after Labor Day crew.
I think so.
But yeah, all of my lesson kids back in school. I see moms with their pumpkin spice lattes.
Ooh, I haven't had one yet. Have you?
The fall season sooner than I anticipated, but I'm not mad.
Yeah, I got to figure out. I refuse to buy mums like at this point.
They're out, man. Everyone is selling them. They're forcing them down your throat, those mums.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm like just finally getting like a good tomato harvest. So I'm like, wait. Like pump the brakes here. Like, Let me enjoy my tomatoes for a hot second before we start moving into like pumpkins and stuff. But, you know,
I do fine. Have a rogue squash plant that has started growing in my yard.
Oh,
I don't know if it's exciting. Bikinis. I don't know if it's acorn squash. I don't know anything about it, but it's there and it's flowering.
Okay, exciting. So maybe you have some winter squash in your future.
Yes.
I love that.
Oh, so we'll see. But I was out with my puppy and I was like, oh my, you are a full plant about to make fruit. Okay.
did it like escape from last year? Like, where did this thing come from?
All I know is Zach did some weeding. And so I happened just to walk back in that area today. Hmm. And in place of the weeds with a very large squash plant.
I do think that they grow like under any condition. Like we always run, so at the farm stand, they run all the leftover pumpkins through the manure spreader in the cow pasture and let the cows eat the pumpkins, you know, that don't sell. So like the day after Halloween, like November 1st is just like pumpkin mania out in the field. And the number of like surprise pumpkin plants that pop up the next year from that is very funny.
They're incredibly resilient.
So they're like, super resilient. Yeah, I have my eye on one.
I've just been calling it the Jon Snow squash. Why? We don't know really who it is or who its dad is, but...
All right. I love that.
Yeah.
All right. Game of Thrones listening fans.
Yeah. Like hilarious. You'll know, because this is a rated G podcast. I can't say all the things I want to say about the squash, but that's
hilarious. I love that.
Yeah. It has shown up and it is my Jon Snow squash.
So, okay. If it makes like a fruit, can you pick it and put like a little cape on it for me?
Yes.
Give him a little sword.
Yes, I hope you should need the flowers.
Because you won't have enough going on this fall.
I know. Now I'm raising the squash plant because I'm obsessed with it now.
Okay, great. Yeah, you got a puppy squash plant and babies on the way. How's puppy doing?
She does eat yellow flowers, so I have to keep her away from.
Well, squash blossoms are, you know, supposed to be a delicacy. So
they are delicious, especially if you stuff them and put them in broth. Oh, delicious.
Mm. But, I haven't tried that. Yeah, we just try to let ours all... Yeah, you know, become squash.
I'll send you. Okay. If anyone wants this recipe, I'll send it to you all. But like a stuffed squash blossom that you then just like cook within lovely fall flavored broth.
Yeah, send me that for sure. We used to do recipes on this show like way back. Mm-hmm. It's time we're bringing it back.
That's going to be out of season if I save it for Thanksgiving.
Good point.
Okay, yeah, I'll definitely share
it. Send it to me. Send it to me. I don't know if any listeners want it, but I will.
If you guys want it, if you listened, message me.
Send us a message.
Let me know you're listening.
I love it.
But speaking of, she's good. She has doubled in size. She looks like a mini German Shepherd, which is super cute.
Oh, that's good, because she is a German Shepherd, right?
She is. Good.
Yeah, it'd be weird if she was like a beagle.
She's just a tiny one.
Just a little one.
But she thinks she's very big, which is super cute. She still has her goblin hours, which is not always fun to deal with. It's always right before we need a nap. But she's training really well. And she started school.
So, oh, is she doing like puppy class?
Yeah, she has a dog trainer who comes on Fridays to hang with her.
I love that.
And Zach.
Nice.
So they are hanging out, getting to know each other well. He seems to like her, which is good. I was like, is it defected? Let me know if it's defected.
Yeah, because he like leaves the house to work, right? And you work from home.
Yes.
Yeah. So the puppy sees you all the time, right?
Oh, yeah. She and I are very close. But Zach's also got to take on the brunt of it once I give birth to the other puppies, aka my twins.
The other puppies.
The other puppies. So he's going to have to take on that puppy, which means he is getting the full education as well.
Good for him.
I've had multiple puppies. This is his first.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. But she's good. She had her first bath. We thought it was a very big moment. She enjoyed it up until the rinse because she liked how the soap felt against her body in the grass. Oh,
interesting. Okay.
Whatever that means.
Yeah. Most dogs are like, get this off of me.
No.
That's hilarious.
She wanted the soap to stay on. She was very excited about the soap.
That's hilarious.
And it's just an oatmeal shampoo. There's nothing fancy about it, but whatever. And she's doing really well training-wise, so I think she'll end up being a good, solid citizen as she continues to mature. She's still only 12. Let's see. By the time we're recording this, she's almost 13 weeks. By the time this comes out, she'll be closer to 15. 15, I think, if I knew my math right. So we're hitting our terrible preteen mindset soon, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah, mentally. That's always a fun time.
She goes to boarding school, though, for a little bit.
Ah, okay.
In the September. So I will get a break from her during that.
Yeah, you'll have enough going on.
Yes. But that's all it's going for me. And, you know, Miss Astrid's just getting fat, getting snuggles from teenage girls. She gets way too many cookies. I am proud of how clean she keeps herself because I have slacked in grooming. Being most of summer being as hot as it is and being as pregnant as I've been. And she just likes being clean. And honestly, I want to give her an award. Like I want to give her the Nobel Peace Prize
for keeping for cleanliness
and my sanity. But yeah, she's doing great too. I wish I could find a good lease home where she could help wean foals from their moms. That would be her dream job. But we are not at that place yet. But I'm keeping that in mind as a potential opportunity for her, is she might need a third career.
I know a guy. We should call up our buddy Kyle. He'll be weaning some foals soon.
He sure will be. But yeah, she does enjoy the babies quite a bit. So that would be her dream position.
She'd be so good at that.
Yes. She's very nice to the babies.
Good.
But how about you? Because I feel like I've watched you live this very fun, like, I'm going to call it authentic horse girl summer the last couple weeks, where it's not shows, it's not like all the glitz and glam. Like, you honestly look like you're just having a saddle club moment.
Yeah, well, it's funny because the saddle club is me and my husband, Eric, and my mom. So
cute.
The three of us just ride. We've ridden together most days. Sometimes it's just me and mom, you know, like Eric and I take turns, you know, on some nights, and he's had some work stuff come up and some other projects and things, you know, where he's taken a night off. So then it's just me and mom riding around, which has been a lot of fun. And yeah, we're just like, everyone's got their horse. The horses, knock wood, have all been sound at the same time, which is a nice treat. And we just wander around. So we found that if we just, kind of pressure mom into cantering a little bit, Like, and just like, okay, mom, go lope up this hill. Like, she'll do it. And she hadn't loped a horse, I think, maybe since 2023. You know, and like, so it started out like, you know, Eric would be ahead of her and I'd sort of be like next to her behind her. And we'd sort of just sort of like safely sandwich her somewhere. Like Eric was pretty far out ahead and then I was pretty far behind. So it's not like we were all like thundering along on top of each other because that would have been worse. But kind of taking her along for the ride. And then the other night, like I was off by myself and Eric went off by himself and I looked and there goes mom, like happily loping up a hill. So, which is awesome. So yeah, she and Wes. So I think he's given her a lot of confidence to go back and also live her best horse girl summer, which is cool. So yeah, happy to sort of facilitate that for her. Yeah. And like, just like sort of getting increasingly unhinged with like the random things I'm doing with Jobber. So like the other day I was, rasping his toes back and he was just loose in the barn, like no halter, just vibes. I was like, this is probably not very safe. A lot of what we're doing is like not Pony Club approved, but we're having a great time. So, you know, I don't think I sent you the picture of the day I brought them all in for the farrier and I rode Jobber and led the other two bareback. I had a helmet
on. You did not.
Oh, well, I had a helmet on for safety.
Well, yeah, safety first. Glad you did that.
Yeah.
But also how fun. Like,
yeah, I was like, whatever, I'm going to ride them in. This is going to be great.
As stressful as they can be, I feel like do keep us really young.
Yeah, like they are simultaneously giving me gray hairs and also keeping me active and youthful and pursuing fun. So, you know, that's something to be said for them. Let's see, I rode Shorty English because I was bored and he needed to go out and get hacked. He was fairly indifferent. I actually thought I could get some better flexion work out of him. I just could feel things differently in that saddle and that was enough to kind of like switch it up. So I think I'll likely put him back in the Western saddle next time I ride him. And I am actually planning to ride him as much as I can in the winter. You know, the winter is always kind of a toss up with the snow and ice conditions, but I think he would really benefit from like short 20 minute walk flat work sessions. And that's exactly what the winter is for. So, so I think I will probably hack him all winter because the days are so short that Eric doesn't really get to come out much after work for like December and January. Then sometimes in February, it'll start to, you know, get lighter, longer, and then he can come out again. But that gives me a couple months to try to get the horse to actually bend correctly because he just doesn't do that. So, you know, and then coordinate with my vet, who's also a body worker, because she's like, well, he really, you know, so a lot of this is muscle memory and he just needs to sort of like learn how to come out of it. So, but then he's been so inconsistently sound since we had the body work done, it's been impossible to actually keep him in any kind of like consistent program. So, so that part's been annoying, but gives me something to work on for the winter. So, cause I do like a project, you know, as much as I like just sort of like larking around in the field, I am a little bit of a goal oriented person. So that year of not showing has been a little bit of a challenge to be like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Like what do I do when I ride? Like, it's been so long since I've just ridden for fun. And it is nice to just hack around, but there comes a point too where I'm like, I want to work on something. So, so that'll give me a good goal for the winter.
I love it. Yeah. I think it can be hard, like where you're not just riding monotonously, if that makes sense. Like, if that's your thing, that's your thing. Like, I think at some point I probably will be that person who's like, I just want to hop on for like 10 to 15 minutes and putt-putt and enjoy that. But I also know myself of like, I also like achieving something.
Yeah. And I think that, yeah, it always keeps you moving forward because otherwise you start to be like, what am I doing? Like, why am I doing this? There's a lot of existential questions ahead of us in this episode. So
yes.
Yeah, we're really just setting the tone early. If you would like a bit of like deep thinking, folks, then boy, do we have an episode for you.
It's going to be a good one. But before we get into all that, we have a message from our premier sponsor, Kentucky Performance Products.
Do you want to help ensure your breeding stallion's reproductive efficiency? Do you want to make sure your newborn foal has the strongest immune system possible? Studies show that supplemental vitamin E can support a stallion's sperm cell quality and motility and offset the effects of stress associated with breeding. They also show that foals of mares supplemented with vitamin E have more responsive immune systems than those that weren't. Elevate Natural Vitamin E can help. A research-proven, powerful antioxidant, Elevate maintains healthy muscle, nerve, and immune functions. It does this by delivering a highly bioavailable source of natural vitamin E that is preferentially absorbed and retained in a horse's tissues. For more information, visit kppusa.com or call 859-873-2974. Well, Joy, we are back with Sam Fawcett of Meraki Equestrian for our Make the Makeover series. And I've loved this because, you know, I always like our Make the Makeover series, but it gives us a chance to, you know, sit down with a trainer for a whole season and like really get to know them. So now we have a great friend in Ontario. So Sam, welcome back to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, lovely. So tell us, what's the latest? You know, we are now sitting at like end of August, early September. It's crunch time. What's going on with Ferda?
Well, I've had to make a bit of a tough decision over the last week that I won't lie, I was pretty down about it a few days ago. I'm kind of coming around a little bit and trying to look for the silver lining, but I've made the decision to withdraw from the makeover for this year for what would have been my seventh year. Ferda, I don't know if she ran around in the paddock a couple weeks ago and just tweaked something, but she hasn't been quite right. And, wanting to give her another like week or so to just kind of, she's sound now, but wanting to give her another week or so to kind of make sure everything is good, unfortunately means that it would be quite a big ask for her in losing a lot of the preparation that I had planned over the last few weeks of doing some off-property schooling, going to a schooling show. And I know she's a bit of a sensitive mare, and I think she's got a lot of potential for the future. So kind of decided to make that decision that's in her best interest and withdraw. If I was a little bit closer to the Kentucky Horse Park, I might consider still coming out for a little schooling experience for her. But when it's a 12-hour haul down from Ontario, it does, that factors in.
I'm so sorry to hear that. That's such a bummer. And seven makeovers. I had no idea you had done that many or would have done.
This year would be the seventh.
Well, I mean, we're always a huge fan of, you know, the horseman's decision here at Retired Racehorse Radio, because we've done it ourselves and had to scratch shows, retire horses. It doesn't make it any easier, though. So, yeah, like long distance hug. Sorry that that's happening to you guys. But yeah, always commend, you know, you for making the best decision for Ferda. And yeah, I mean, who knows what else is in store for her in the future. So one little, I want to say a little speed bump, but you know, yeah, the makeover is a big show. It's a big goal. We all, you know, work really hard towards it. So it is still really disappointing, you know, and I know like the trainer group's always like, this is just a step. It's just the beginning, but it's still a thing that you've worked for, you know, more than a year for you. Like you've had her for a while and you've had a big year in general, you know, like new farm, moving properties, like you've had a lot going on. So.
Yeah. And even in some of my other show horses, like Canton Comet, who, you know, I had planned on being able to get out to more shows with her this year. And I have a couple other thoroughbreds at home that are great ambassadors for the breed. And I've kind of had to, you know, make some financial decisions on pulling a few of them out of some shows this summer. Just had like 4 weeks in a row where it was just like vet bill after vet bill across like the cats, horses and dogs. So, you know, that it's always a little bit disappointing. So when I kind of started having to whittle down what I was planning on doing with my other horses, I was still really looking forward to doing the makeover with Ferda. So having that drop out of the kind of plans is definitely, you know, you take it to heart a little bit, but at the same time, like, you have to do what's right for you and your horse, even if it's a tough decision.
Yeah, you can't see me. I'm like vigorously nodding my head because we did the same thing this year. Like financially, we're like, you know what? Showing is a luxury. You know, we're not pros. Yep. We just do it for fun. So we're like, okay, that's going to have to go because we have some other goals and some stuff coming up. So yeah. Yeah, it still sucks though. It's like, I don't know, somehow, I guess I didn't realize how much of my identity was kind of tied up in like pursuing the show ring. And I had kind of been getting to that point, you know, where I was like, I'm ready to kind of take a step back, I think. But yeah, same thing. I think I have probably, I don't know, it feels very braggy to be like, I have one of the best thoroughbred ranch horses, because there's probably only five of us in the country, you know, actively showing thoroughbred ranch horses. But I was like, I have a really good one. And I feel like obligated to take him out and be an ambassador. And then at that point, I'm not doing it for myself anymore. You know, I feel like I'm doing it for a community. And then it feels like a bigger, you know, not failure, but like a, you know, yeah, it hurts a little more to step back. But that's also me like putting a whole bunch of stuff on that maybe, you know, only exists in my head. So I don't know.
Yeah. It's funny how our mind can really like play tricks on us sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Right. You know, and it is funny because that was the topic we wanted to talk to you about today, was competitor mindset, you know, and trainer mindset, and how do you prepare for a big show? But, you know, I mean, really, like, how do you prepare for all of this? You know, because we are taking kind of these underdog horses and making them into ambassadors, and that can be kind of a loaded thing. And sometimes I think we can put a lot more pressure on ourselves for doing stuff like that. So, you know, it's you've a always big been responsibility. It is, yeah, and. You know, it's as big of a responsibility as you want to make it, I guess. You know, some of us can just, I'm getting better at just enjoying the ride now. But you know, you've always been such a good competitor. Like, I think, you know, that's among many reasons that you've had success at the makeover, is like, you know how to ride the test, you know how to turn the horse out, you know, to the best of its ability, you know how to, you know, kind of approach this. So, you know, what kind of like mental training did you have to do over the years to kind of get in that mindset where you're, you know, ready to turn it on in the show ring?
You know, it's funny. I think I say this a lot to my students, that riding is such a mental game. And I had an old trainer that kind of said that to me maybe 8 or 9 years ago. He was like, it's really a mental game. Like, it's more mental than you think it is. And if you listen to riders like Kent Farrington and McLean Ward, for example, who, you know, are always out there saying like, you lose more often than you win in this sport. So you need to be able to bounce back and kind of keep chasing after what you're looking for, and having that kind of like fighting mentality a little bit, to be willing to take the hits as they come and, you know, punch back and try and make your way somehow. Over the years, I've really come to understand that more and more, on how much your mentality really does affect things. Like, I used to have like a lot of show anxiety, and like, I'd get to the horse show and just be nauseous. Like, forget about that. I'd wake up in the morning and be nauseous. Several occasions, my other half would look at me in the morning and be like, do you enjoy this? Like, are you having fun? Because I just feel like, you know, you're sitting here like hugging the toilet because you're so nervous about, you know, what the day could bring. And the funny part was, like, as soon as I swung a leg over, gone. Like, I don't really get butterflies when I'm in the in gate. Like, when I'm on the horse, when I'm on course, I kind of get that tunnel vision. But leading up to it, like, it's a lot, especially with the young green horses, because you have no idea what that day might bring. Like, you don't know if they're going to come out with their A game, or if they're going to come out and show that they are a green horse, and you need to be able to step up for them and help them out on those days. But it means that there's a lot of variables and different outcomes that could happen. And I think that that's what used to get me the most, was just like not knowing. I was really lucky for a few years to have a wonderful gelding that, although he was really quirky about a lot of things in life and about being in the warm-up ring, you know, once I got on course, like, I always knew I would finish that course. He would get me from point A to point B, and whether we took rails or whatever happened, I knew that I would be safe. And that was what was important. And then you start riding and showing a lot of really green young horses and taking them to their first events. And again, like, I always joke around, like, I'm kind of a nervous, anxious person, but as soon as I swing a leg over, like, there's a different Samantha that comes into play. And, you know, if they throw a buck or do something, like, it doesn't really get me. But before I swing that leg over, I'm like, oh man, why do I do this to myself?
And like, why do we? Like, you know, because I mean, okay, like, I'm a non-pro, so there's not a whole lot, right? It's just like my entry fee is all, and my pride is what's riding on my show performance. But, you know, you're a professional, so it's a little bit of a different world. But like, why do we put the pressure on ourselves to, you know, be good? I don't know. I don't even know how I want to say that. Like, not even to win, right? You just want to do well. You want to do well for yourself, however you categorize that. But like, what, now we're getting into like some pretty heavy duty psychology. Why do we do this? I don't know. Joy, do you have anything to add here? Why, like, why do we do this to ourselves? Why do we put the pressure on so much for this?
I mean, I think there's a level of reward that comes with it too. Like, I think as a horse person, I can probably say this, and if anyone wants to complain, you can email me, but I think there's a level of crazy and stress that we're all addicted to. And we love the dopamine effect at the end of the show. That's what I think we love. We're addicted to that.
Or, you know, like the feeling when you jump a clear round and, mm-hmm. you know, just everything, you have that moment where everything just falls into place while you're out there and every, like, it just seems like the jumps come up easy and, you know, that flow state is kind of what I was looking for the words for. I think like for me, like I love being in that flow state and I've always been a competitor even before I really heavily competed in the horseback riding. Like I did track and field in high school. I played pretty much every sport. And for me, like, yeah, I definitely love that like dopamine high of like the flow state and having a good workout or a good game and stuff like that. So, I mean, for me, I guess it was kind of a natural transition out of high school and that like, even though I went to university and tried to do the whole accounting thing after I graduated, like I just got pulled back. I was like, no, I'm supposed to be an athlete. Like I'm not supposed to sit at a desk all day.
Yeah. And then once you add in the horse factor too, it's like, you know, we're doing it for them. Ultimately, like the horse, I do think there are some horses that are actually quite competitive and understand, you know, the game, the good race horses understand the game, you know, but generally we are doing it for the horses, although yeah, debatable whether the horses are doing it, you know, to win or not. But, you know, once you add in that other factor of like, I need to be good for my partner too, and that is an interesting new form of pressure we've put on for this as well. You know, like you can be a competitor yourself in track and field, but then also you're trying to do right by your animal too, which is adding a whole new layer.
I mean, I really resonate with that because that's exactly how I feel. Like, you know, for me to go out and do something individually, I know I can push myself to the limits and I'm willing and committed to do that. But you're right, we're working with a live animal and that has their own thoughts and feelings and opinions. And while I've definitely been lucky enough to have a couple horses in my string over the years that want to be out there and they're hunting the jumps, and it's a different feeling when you've got a horse that's like just taking you, not pulling, but just taking you. Like they want to do the things. And, you know, maybe I've got one that if there's a huge crowd watching, I can't go near the rail because he will start throwing bucks. And I swear, like when he hears people being like, oh, like it just gets worse. And so, you know, I think like there's definitely some horses that love that environment, being in the spotlight. I think my big black show jumper, Tucker, I think he did it because he loved me. And I don't think he actually really enjoyed much about the horse shows, certainly not the warm-up ring. Like sometimes we could only get a jump or two in before he was like spinning out of control because he was spooking at all the horses. But, you know, he did it out of love for me, I think. And then you get some horses that they're doing it, but they're not in it, right? So that, and sometimes they just have their own days too, where you come out and you're like, oh man, like they just behind my leg, they don't want to go forward. And, you know, now with the perspective that I have at this age in my life, I will usually go back to the drawing table and be like, okay, why is this horse not enjoying what I'm asking them to do? Is it a physical thing? Is it a mental thing? Do they not understand? You know? And again, I think that's another part of the mental game of riding, is like, you need to be able to take a step back and evaluate what was going on and kind of move forward and make a new plan, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we have a similar conversation because we recorded this episode a little bit out of order. We're going to have a very similar conversation in our training tip. So if you folks are interested by that, listen on, because we're going to talk about that again. Because that is like, that's the crux and the challenge of being a horseman, right? Is trying to figure out like, which one is it? And is it me? Yeah. Am I the problem? Is the horse the problem? Is the tack the problem? Is it something in between? So yeah, the longer I talk, the more I'm like, why do we do this? Man, geez, I should just look at the mountain, the pasture. That seems safe.
I like puzzles. So maybe that's what's got me doing this. So for so many years, it's just like every new horse is a new puzzle.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I love a jigsaw puzzle. So and I just need to apply that to the horses. I'll be all right.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now, how do you bounce back? You know, you've had a pretty big disappointment now and having to scratch the makeover. So, you know, what do you do? Do you let yourself pout for a day and then kind of pick yourself up and move on? Or?
Yeah, I definitely pouted for a day, maybe two. But yeah, I mean, I feel I've been through a lot of stuff in my life and at a young age. And so maybe I developed some resilience a little early on, but I feel like sometimes when things like this happen, I'm kind of like, okay, you know, it sucks, but I know that at this point, like from what I've experienced, that there's, you know, I kind of a little bit believe that everything happens for a reason. And so it's like, you never know what would have happened if we forged ahead. Like maybe she wouldn't, maybe she would have got more lame because we, you know, didn't really figure out what was going on because it was so inconsistent. Or, you know, maybe she got down there and then it was fantastic. Like you really have no idea what could happen. But I think for me, like I just try and look at the silver lining in some way and kind of think about like, okay, well, this sucks that I was planning this for the last year and a half with this horse. And, you know, life just didn't work out the way that I thought it was going to over the last year and a half. And in a lot of ways, I thought that when that was happening to me, that I was being pointed in another direction. And maybe I honestly thought about, like retiring from being a professional last fall when I was going through what I was going through. And, I think that looking back now, like everything that happened led me to this place now where I have my own farm and we can really set down roots and grow and we can make all these new plans for the future that weren't possible last year. So I kind of try and look at life a little bit that way. And so with Ferda, it's like, okay, I've got to go back to the drawing board now. I'm going to give her the time off now and let her just rest a little bit and then bring her back into work and figure out like, what will our new plan be? Or am I going to maybe try and do some like winter shows with her? Am I maybe going to just train all winter and then break out in the spring? Like that's kind of what the goal will be now, because I really like that mare and I think she's got a lot of potential. So, you know, I'm going to just keep working at her, and I don't have any plans to sell her unless somebody wants to come and offer me something for her. And, but, you know, I think there's definitely always horses that come along and I don't know what it is, but I just really enjoy that mare. And so I kind of want to see where we can go together as a partner. And yeah, just knowing that, you know, I'm making the decisions for her best interest. And I just have to know that, you know, find some peace in the fact that like, I'm doing this for the horse. I'm doing this to make sure that she has a really good chance at having a good future. And yeah, you have to just kind of try and make peace with it a little bit.
Yeah, that's really powerful. Like, I didn't realize you were kind of at that, like, you know, point of making a decision, you know, of stepping back from being a professional or carrying on. And I mean, it seems like you're on a track now where like you're going down the right path. You've got a facility of your own. Like, you know, it seems like things are looking up in that way. So yeah, I love the everything happens for a reason. I don't know how true it is, but I also tell myself that a lot. We just don't always know what the reason is.
You know what? Hindsight's 20/20. Like you're not going to know until at some point in the future, you're kind of like, oh, like, you know, the butterfly effect a little bit. Like, well, if that hadn't happened, like I might not be where I am today and I might actually not be happy with that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I've been like ready to be like, ugh, like let's take a break from horses like several times in the past couple of years. You know, they've all been lame at the same time. We've lost ones to colic and other like perpetual lame. Like it's just been kind of like on paper not a great couple of years, but then there's plenty of times where I'm like, this is like, this is our life, like this is just how it goes when you have horses. And you, yeah, you do have to be fairly resilient, I think, in this sport, even if you're not riding competitively, you know, in this world of horses. Yep. So yeah, developing that resilience while also still enjoying the good times too. You don't want to be like so resilient that you can't let yourself enjoy the moment either. So
yeah, 100%. And yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, let's go back to, you know, when you're talking about like that flow state. I've heard that phrase a lot before. I don't do a lot of like sports psychology study at all, which maybe I should have, because I probably could have been a much better runner in high school had I actually applied myself to any of this. But, you know, so like you're in the in-gate and you're kind of like in the zone. Like, what is that like? How do you get there?
You know, like I said, like I spend all morning really, really stressed. And so over the years, I've kind of figured out things that work for me. And like, this might sound like kind of corny, but like I listen to motivational speeches, in the morning when I'm getting ready before I leave the house, if I'm driving to the show, like that's kind of what I have playing because I don't want to let my own thoughts take over, if that makes sense. Cause I think, you know, I've gone down the road a little bit in sports psychology and stuff like that. So I don't want to, get too complex at the moment, but, you know, like our brain is not necessarily us. So sometimes your brain exists, from a perspective of trying to keep you safe. And there was a really good sports psychology book I read like 10 years ago, and I wish I could remember the name of it, but it basically talked about how you have like different brains, and your chimpanzee brain or your ape brain, I can't remember exactly how they referred to it, is trying to keep you safe. So it's the part of your brain that's telling you like, oh, this could happen. You could fall off. What if your horse stops? Won't it be embarrassing if you get eliminated? Like that's that kind of primary, like, what's the word I'm looking for? You're kind of, primate brain is trying to like keep you safe. And for a long time, thousands of years ago, like that kept us alive. But nowadays, like we don't have dinosaurs and monsters chasing us every single day. We have different things that we're dealing with. But that's what that kind of voice in your head came from, was trying to keep you safe when it was like, you know, there were much more serious day-to-day worries that we had. Well, I shouldn't say more serious, but just very different. And then there's the professor side of your brain that is the part that can kind of rationalize and like talk back to that part of your brain a little bit and be like, well, I'm going to do this and that to make sure I don't have any stops, or my horse has never stopped. Why am I even worrying about that? You know, you have that professor brain that can be rational, but they're always kind of at war a little bit. And so, I really wish I knew the name of that book off the top of my head, because it was, I'll have to look it up and I'll try and post it or share it somewhere. But, that I really got that book, and it did change the way I thought about things a little bit, so that I could at least like separate myself from the side of myself that was trying to like sabotage me a little bit, and causing a lot of that anxiety. And, so, you know, I, and the other thing too, is like, if I'm listening to music, it's usually some pretty hardcore rap or something like that. Nice. because like I need to get my headset in a different state. So that when I swing that leg over that horse, like I can give the horse the best of me and be able to be in the moment, because you have to be in the moment when you're riding horses. You can't think about like, oh, the last time I schooled them, they were doing this, because like, guess what? Your horse doesn't think like that. They might be the exact same today, or they might be completely different. So you really need to ride what's underneath you and have a little bit of amnesia on like what happened in the previous rides. And also sometimes like on course, like you've got to have some amnesia, and you know, you hit a rail. Okay, whatever, it happened. There's still 8 more jumps to jump I have to focus on. Like, or, you know, I messed up a movement in dressage. Like I missed my mark. Okay, put it away, because there's still 12 more other movements on this test that I have to be focused for. And I think that for all riders, like if you want to be, if you're competing and you're spending money competing, I'm assuming you want to be competitive on some level, even if you don't need to go to the Olympics. So, you know, like try and read books and listen to some audiobooks or podcasts, and get some perspective from other athletes who have been out there and done it.
Oh, super. I love that. Yeah. And like for us, we've always just sort of been in this mindset, or we've tried to get in this mindset, you know, and again, non-pros, so we don't have much riding on this, but like the show is just there to help kind of guide your training for the next thing, is what we always did. Now, of course, then, yeah, you add cows to an event and you're like, okay, now there's another brain on the loose out here. So that can get a little, you know, you're trying to be like, all right, you don't know how that cow is going to go. So there is a little bit of a danger factor, so that sometimes you can't fight a little bit of nerves, you know, and I especially like going down the fence can be really scary, you know, so like that kind of thing, you know, sometimes you just can't separate that fear. But yeah, otherwise, like, yeah, I find like just trying to separate, like I am doing this because I want to do this.
Yeah.
There's nothing to be afraid of here other than a cow, you know, which they can be scary. It is what it is. But yeah. And like, I think if I stepped back into anything over fences, because it's been so many years, I think I would have the nerves again for sure, because there is a little bit of that danger factor, right? Like, you know, you could fall off, you could hurt yourself. You probably won't, but you could. So.
And jumping is funny like that too, because I think you kind of get used to like what you're jumping as well. So if you're consistently jumping over 4 feet, 2'6" doesn't really seem like anything. But if you're only ever jumping 2'3", 2'6" and kind of staying in that comfort zone, then yeah, it seems big because you haven't really like pushed yourself out of it and realized that you can be, you know, you can try something and not like majority of the time you're going to be okay, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, that definitely carries over from like sports training and horse training and all of it, you know, is like you condition for more than what the event is asking for. And same thing, you know, you ideally are training to a higher level at home than you're going to compete at least you know, with a green horse too. Like if the horse is comfortable at 2'6", you might show at 2 foot, you know, and if we're comfortable going down the fence, you know, balls to the wall at home, maybe I'm just going to do a boxing class at the show, you know, and kind of like, so you're showing a little bit more where you're training yourself to be comfortable and then you keep raising your bar.
And I think that that will definitely take some pressure off of you on show day. Like if you know that you're capable of doing more than the level you're competing at, then it does take a little bit of stress off you. Cause you're like, man, we jump 3 to 6 inches bigger than this at home on a regular basis. Like we're going to be fine. And, the older gentleman that used to, who was the one I mentioned about saying riding is very much a mental sport. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize he was doing it at the time, but when I started showing my horse, he would like in, usually it was like the last jump of a line or the last jump of a grid. So that I was set up in a way where my horse could get through the grid and get over the jump, or I knew how many strides I had to ride down the line and how I needed to ride that line to make sure that we produced a good jump. And even though I was only competing at like a meter, he would have me jumping like out of some of these lines at like 130. And I didn't realize at the time, but like it did give us a lot of confidence, because even though it was maybe only one jump on course that was that big, like it started to make a meter look really small. So you get a little, I got a little bit of confidence from that. And that's something I try and do with my students as well, is like in a very safe, controlled way, let's jump a little bit bigger within like reason of what you and your horse are capable of, so that the other stuff starts to look smaller.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That's like a little bit of like a trick psychology there, but it, I mean, it works, you know, like it works for conditioning. It works for marathon training. I think it like, it works for, for all of it. So
yeah,
I love that. Well, Sam, this has been super interesting. I hope listeners enjoy this as well. Let us know your thoughts. Again, sorry to hear that you won't be at the makeover, but you know, you are definitely finding the silver lining in all of it. And I think that is very inspiring to all of us, because we've all, you, if you're around horses long enough, you will have a disappointment like this. And it's all about how you kind of pick up and carry on. So yep. Sam, remind listeners where they can find you on social.
Meraki Equestrian on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Lovely. Well, Sam, thanks very much. Enjoy your autumn, and we will be in touch again soon.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Cashel has been crafting top-notch products since 1986, designed to make your ride safer, more convenient, and downright enjoyable. From the Crusader Fly Mask, the ultimate fly mask, trusted by riders nationwide, to the Blanket Top Performance Felt Pad with pressed felt with merino fleece, it's like a spa day for your horse's back. To the beautiful beaded halters, adjustable, durable, and gorgeous. Visit CashelCompany.com today and gear up for the ride of a lifetime. Cashel, where quality meets the saddle.
For first-time horse owners and new riders just starting out, finding the information and support you need can be challenging. That's why Equine Network has partnered with Sentinel Feed to bring you My New Horse, a place where equestrians just getting into horse ownership or riding will find the resources and community they need at precisely their stage of the equine journey. From important horsekeeping information and how-to videos to social media communities and more, My New Horse is your one-stop shop for riders of all levels and disciplines who are eager to find easy-to-understand horse care information and guidance. Start your horse ownership journey today. Visit mynewhorse.com.
Well, it's that time of the episode where we bring on new vocations. And today we are joined by Bridget Heasley, who oversees both Thoroughbreds and Standardbreds, but at their Ohio facility for new vocations. Welcome back to the show, Bridget.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Always love having you. I know you are knee deep in getting ready for makeover prep. You have a ton of horses. You're also getting ready to be adopted for new vocations from the Standardbred side. But to make your life even easier, I have a loaded question for you.
So wonderful. Easy, so nice.
Some may consider it a hot take even. Okay. I am curious, because I've seen a lot of things this season, watching different shows and hearing different complaints, we'll call them, or concerns, how we can tell if a horse, when they, whether they're first coming to the facility or a horse you're working with, if it's actually maybe a lameness issue, or is it really potentially just weakness? I'm thinking horses who might need poor support, stifle support, versus, I don't know, an EPM diagnosis to jump right into it. So yes, how do you determine whether it might just be muscle weakness?
So I think the vast majority of the horses that are coming in are going to exhibit what we consider weaknesses as far as riding horses, because they have just never been asked to move that way. And so just because you see a horse that maybe doesn't take as deep a step in the hind end, don't immediately go, oh, well, they're lame. Their stifles are bad. Probably not. They're probably just weak in the stifles and weak in their core. They have never been asked to round up and reach underneath of themselves before. And this movement is entirely new. And if you think about, if you first start a second activity, if you take a Pilates class, if you take a yoga class, a Zumba class, and you've moved your body in a way you never have before, you're going to be sore. Mm-hmm. Is that a chronic lameness? No, it's just you learning to move your body in a different way. And so I think the very first thing to consider is that it's probably a weakness. And then after that, investigating further. And kind of like you mentioned, there's sort of these trendy problems that you see in the horse industry. And I see it, you know, it goes in waves of, you know, oh, everybody's x-raying necks right now, or backs for kissing spine, or, well, this horse is weak and it clearly has to be EPM and the people are not in a high EPM area. And so when you're going to look for the underlying cause of the movement you're seeing, don't go looking for zebras in a horse pasture. Like, start with the most obvious reason for this and then work your way out, and don't immediately panic about something. Now, are you going to encounter cases from time to time where you have a horse that has a lesion in its neck? Sure, we've had that pop up before, but most of the time you're seeing a horse that is weak and under-muscled or underfit for the job at hand, not mm-hmm. underfit in general. Although sometimes, you know, we have the horses in our broodmare program that come in and they are not fit for anything except for birthing babies. But, you know, looking at if this horse were in a program 5 days a week, do we think it would still look like this? Or are we noticing actual gait abnormalities? Or is it actually, you know, are you noticing pain responses with it, or just a way of going that doesn't look exactly like what you're hoping for?
That is like the hardest part of being a horseman, yeah. too, right? Is like trying to go down this like thread of paths, right? And I say this all the time, like I'm always at the crossroads of like lameness or fitness or weakness mm-hmm. or like what the problem is. And then like, I'm also just really bad at assessing like how much work has this horse been in? Mm-hmm. You know, like what I consider some work is maybe no work to other people. And then other people yeah. are like, oh my God, that's so much work. So like some of that can be really subjective. And yeah. I know sometimes when you talk to a vet about it, it like what they say may not actually be what you think they said. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
you know, they're
yeah.
like, oh, the horse is in regular work. And I'm like, yeah, I ride like 2-3 days a week this summer. And what right. they really mean is 5-6 days a week, you know, but then other people are like, that's an insane workload. So like, I never know. I'm like, I don't know. Is my horse fit? I have no idea anymore. We wander yeah. around the pasture anymore. So, you know, at yeah, this point, it doesn't matter, but.
Regular work too is still subjective in, you know, I am regularly hacking this horse, but I am not asking this horse to carry itself in a frame.
Right. And corrective work versus like,
yes,
a big workload of incorrect, like, inverted, upside down, heavy on the forehand work is not the same as a moderate load of correct work too. So it's like another area of subjectivity.
And evaluating without a rider as much as possible, without a rider, without tack, to eliminate balance issues, tack fit, you know, that kind of stuff too, because you can have a sound and fit horse that is wildly affected by a rider that is incredibly off balance, heavy handed, things of that nature too. So, you know, we rush to lameness diagnoses, and like on one hand that's great because we're worried about the horse's welfare, but on the other hand we're not always considering our role in mm-hmm. what we're seeing.
Mm. Yeah, horses so complicated.
They are the
TLDR of that conversation.
Yeah, kind of like, yeah, too long. Didn't read. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, like, I love that you touch on the rider too, because I've seen riders whose posture greatly affects
how that horse is going to move. Mm-hmm. I think we see it all the time, like the TikToks and Instagram posts of, you know, me versus my trainer riding a horse, right? Like, it's a great example to check your own biomechanics.
Yeah.
Because if, you know, you're putting more weight on one side, if you tend to be crooked or lopsided, like, your horse is going to feel off and you're going to be so confused. Why? Yeah. It's you and it's okay. All right.
Let's talk about something far less complicated, such as this adorable, adoptable horse of the week. Bridget, can you tell us about True to Mock?
Yes, Mr. Mocky is just, you know, a super classy warhorse. He came out of a lovely racing stable in Kentucky, pacing bred by Mach 3, so, you know, a little older, fancy bloodlines. And he is everything you'd expect. You know, perfect gentleman on the ground, wonderful manners, that very characteristic standard bred face and attitude, you know, complete with the helicopter head twirlies in his stall all the time. But he is, you know, he is done with that racing life, done being fast. He loves to just stroll around the farm and down the road and through the fields and just kind of have a nice relaxing day. He likes giving pony rides to little ones. I don't have the pictures on the website yet, but I do have some pretty precious pictures of him with my friend's toddler giving her kisses and pony rides. And he's just like the perfect family edition. You know, if you need a horse for husbands or grandmas or wee littles to, you know, just kind of ride around and have
me. I want a grandma horse. God, I'm at that stage.
Yes.
I'm not a grandma. I just really want a grandma horse.
He is the guy for you. He's a very chill dude and is going to be a fantastic addition for somebody.
Oh, I always love when you guys have like the outdoor video of you just like wandering away. Like, this is my favorite video that you guys do. But what I love with this horse is like this naturally level top line too. Like, that's a horse that just looks relaxed. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a guy. Yeah,
watching him move, and he, like, you can just tell from his face, like, he's just like, whatever you need, that's
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
I love that horse in the barn. Also, I'd have, if I adopted him, there's no way his name wouldn't be Macchiato. I'm just throwing that out. If
I love that.
Let me know.
Yeah. Then you have like the nickname of the nickname. Yeah. You're ready to go.
Yes. I was like, oh, because he does look like a little coffee color. He's so cute.
Oh, I like him a lot. He's great. Someone's going to need to snap this horse up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's a great, great fee. I'm going to say fee, not price, because it's all adoption. All goes back to the program. He's $1,500. So you're getting a really mentally sound veteran horse who's just eager to be groomed and loved on and go for happy trail rides. Like, who can ask for anything more? Honestly. So
there goes Bridget riding away into the sunset.
I know. Video. He's like so happy and chill just to go off property. We love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
So if anyone's interested in True to Mock, apologies, you'll want to go to horseadoption.com or newvocations.org. Get your applications in and approved. It's okay if you miss him this first round, because there's always horses coming through. And Bridget, I'm sure you are happy to help match the right horse to the right adopter.
Very much.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on and playing hot takes with us.
Thank you.
And until next time, we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you so much.
You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on the website at horseradionetwork.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Retired Racehorse Radio. You can follow the network at Twitter at Horse Radio. You can find me on Instagram and Threads at The Horseback Writer. My email is kristen@horseradionetwork.com.
You can find me on Instagram at MisfitMare, and my email is joy@horseradionetwork.com. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products, Cashel Company, and Horse Radio Network, and to our partners, New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program and the Retired Racehorse Project. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, at horseradionetwork.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, as it really helps us grow and you won't miss an episode. Remember to set your goals high and love to learn from every ride
and cow side leg.
Bye, guys.